Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Welcome back to Ruined, everybody. My name is Hallie.
And my name is Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie for you.
Yeah, every week, day in, day out. No, week in, week out, I guess.
Week in,
one day,
week
it'll,
out, every
one
week.
One day it'll be every day. One day we'll do this every single day.
I mean, listen, if that's what the people demand,
then we will do it.
And we look down and our mics aren't even plugged in. We're just talking to nobody.
It's like behind us. It's just like a wasteland because nuclear winter has started and we're the last people on Earth just podcasting into oblivion.
Can't wait.
There's a movie, you know?
I mean, at least a scripted podcast, you know?
At very least.
A short, a web series, maybe.
Yes, it does sound like a web series.
We wanted to kick off this week's episode with a follow-up to a recent episode. We recently covered the movie Possessor, amazing, for our sci-fi month. And we got a great message from somebody who is a scientist. Now, to be clear, we've done absolutely no research. So this person's saying they're a scientist, and we believe it. If somebody sends you a message on the internet, it is true.
Yeah, whatever they say they are, they are. She said, I'm a scientist. She is a scientist.
Great. She says, and her name is Colette. Colette, thank you so much for messaging us.
Yes, thank you.
She loves the show. And that's it.
That's the information we needed to relay.
Wanted to add a few extra details about toxoplasmosis. It's more of a concern for outdoor cats and our indoor cats because they can pick up the parasite from infected rodents, birds, or other small animals, which they then pass through their feces, which if inhaled by pregnant ladies, then infects them. The most freaky part about this parasite, once infected, the parasite pretty much lives in the host, human, for the rest of their lives. It doesn't cause any more issues after the initial infection. It just kind of chills out with you for life. A real who's married to who situation.
Wow.
I feel like as someone who had an outdoor cat, I feel like I probably had this or have it forever, I guess.
Well, if you had it, you have it. That's it.
I don't know how to feel about that.
I mean, you probably have a parasite in you now.
Oh, okay. Wow, the truth comes out. How you feel about me?
A third host of the podcast, Hallie's parasite that she got from an outdoor cat fecal matter.
Damn, that is a horrifying idea. It's like you just get like a tapeworm when you're like eight, and it's just the worm now.
Yeah, it's weird how much of disease and infection can be like super permanent and like how much of our body, like where it's like, well, that's it.
That's a good point. I mean, again, not to get it, this is also terrifying, but I just read this thing about how like up to a third of people who have had COVID have had like neurological issues afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and
well,
psychological
fuck.
Issues.
Yeah. Cause it's like, we weren't even set up to deal with people's like chronic illnesses or mental illness before. And now we're going to have, 100,000 or however many end up with these long-term effects. America, we can't do, we're just bad. I think actually the movie we're going to do this week, this is closer to what I think of the American medical system than like our idea of it.
Okay, great. Because we are continuing on Sci-Fi Month, and this was recommended by Brad, who I have met and is lovely and loves the pod, which I appreciate. And he wrote in suggesting, because we're doing sci-fi, that we should do the 1985 sci-fi horror classic Reanimator. He said he saw it in seventh grade and the movie shaped him for better or for worse.
Oh boy, I gotta imagine for worse, Brad, but
I am now so eager to hear all about this movie because having met this person, I'm like, what is the connection here?
Yeah, I guess my question, is this person a animate walking headless corpse carrying his own head?
You know, I didn't notice that, but I wouldn't say that I'm always the most aware when I'm meeting new people, especially at comedy shows.
You're a party animal. You kind of, you're bipping and you're bopping. You got stuff going
I'm drunk. It's dark. I don't know. Like,
you're not looking up at people's faces. Come on.
I'm not trying to be like, where does the neck end and the head start? I don't know. I'm not always paying attention. I don't know where mine do or don't. That's a different issue.
So with that perfect segue, we are doing Reanimator, which is also known as H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator. It is based on a short story by H.P. Lovecraft. And Allison, I realize, have you ever read anything by H.P. Lovecraft? Or will you read a short horror? Or is it just the visual?
I feel like I used to read horror when I was younger, weirdly enough. Like, because, like, I feel like a lot of horror books are, like, pretty... like, good when you're, like, kind of making that jump to, like, adult reading.
Yes.
Because I remember I read a lot of mysteries. And then, like, I read some Stephen King. And I didn't read a lot of short stories horror. So I haven't... H.P. Lovecraft isn't an author I'm super familiar with, though I know, like, loosely from, like, the world of writing.
Yeah, and he's an iconic author. There has kind of... He's had his, like, reckoning recently because, you know, he's very racist. And I think sort of the argument is, wasn't everyone, of course, they mean white people, at the time racist? And the answer is yes, but not every writer who was white in his time period, he was writing like the early 1900s, would put the racism so specifically into the work sometimes.
Into the work, yeah, sure.
But it's I think, probably the best H.P. Lovecraft adaptation. And we always like to have Allison watch the trailer and get her first thoughts on it. So, Allison, what did you think of the reanimated trailer?
I love the trailer. The scariest part was the ad at the beginning for a pillow that's shaped like a cube that I got on YouTube.
Oh, a cube.
Which I was like, oh, a cube pillow. No, but the trailer itself, I mean, it's one of my favorite kinds of trailers, which is... man with a deep voice kind of doing the VO and being like, this has never happened before, you know, which I love and I miss. You know, it's a lot. I would say the visuals are kind of funny, though I'm sure if I were following along the movie, I would find them more terrifying because, of course, I would be aware of, like, what the plot is and what's happening. But, like, at one point when he, like, reanimates the cat, I'm like, well, that's just funny.
There are definitely some real moments that are played for laughs, which I appreciate because I would say the last 20 minutes of this movie are some of the gnarliest stuff you're going to see, but in a more 80s sort of like wink, you know, like versus something more realistic like Possessor, which was like hyper-realistic, hyper-bloody.
Yes.
This is more goo, more of a goo-based scare.
Seemed like a lot of goo.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fun. And like I see, it seems like a pretty straightforward plot.
Absolutely. We also take a baseline scary. And Allison, how scary do you find the concept of having a roommate?
Oh, so scary.
As someone who lives alone.
I've been living alone for a very long time. I've had some real traumatic, like nothing so devastating, but like some real, I would say like one of the worst, the meanest I ever was to somebody was a roommate who had done something by mistake, which... I still blame her for this. I was living with a friend of mine and I had come home from work. And this is when I was like making like $28,000 a year living in Manhattan, working in publishing. Just like, I was like, well, how did that math work? And I had gotten paid and it had been after like, the second week of the month where you have like no money.
Yeah.
And because like you had paid your rent and then like hadn't gotten paid again yet.
Now in mine, it would be like eating one Papa John's pizza over the course of a week.
Yeah, I would just have, like, I would get, like, a day-old bagel every day, and that was, like, take me from breakfast to dinner. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, I looked amazing, but it was not a realistic way to live my life. And so it was February, and I remember I walked all the way from Midtown back to the Upper West Side and stopped at Zabar's and, like, bought everything. I got, like, good turkey, all these veggies, fancy cheese, picked, like, everything. And I came home, and I carried them home in the freezing cold, and dropped them on the floor and ran out really quick to go pick up my laundry. And like 5 minutes elapsed between the time I had gotten home and then left and came back. And in that time, my roommate had come home and saw the bags on the floor and thought they were garbage took them out to the dumpster. I cannot express to you how much these were comically grocery bags. Like there was like celery and a baguette, like literally sticking out of one of them. It was they were so heavy. It was so clearly food.
The idea threw them that you, in the dumpster. Like, oh, somebody left all this fresh fruit and vegetables and bread on the ground. They're obviously trash.
Like I came back in and I was like, oh, where are my groceries? Thinking like maybe she put them away. She was like, what groceries? And I was just, and like,
oh,
we got
girl,
to, we found
absolutely
out.
Absolutely not. You can't say what groceries. You know what groceries.
And this just happened. So like, I was like, okay,
what
okay,
groceries?
Okay. And I was like, I need a minute, and like had to go in my room and like collect myself. I had a third roommate at the time too, who I was just like, I'm going to need to talk to you about this because this is a nightmare. But I called her. I was like, you are unquestionably the dumbest person I've ever met, and
wow.
I truly can't believe you're still alive.
Like, Allison,
that's what I said to her.
What did she
which
say?
Which was so mean. She was so nice, but this was just, like, clearly a moment of, like, I don't know. I can't explain what happened. She was like, I'll write you a check. I'll go buy groceries. I was like, no, you can't do it right. I'm so particular. It was such a nightmare.
I mean, to be fair, that's like the one thing that would set me off. If someone's like, you know all that food you just bought that was like your food for the next 2 weeks? I put it in the garbage. You don't have it anymore.
Yeah, it's
brutal.
Not even like, oh, I like took it into the hall. Like, it's like in a dumpster. You can't even like save it. It was pretty traumatic. So like when I think of roommates, like those are the kinds of things I think of. And it's horrifying to me.
Boy, I mean, this chilled me to the bone. And I hope that this movie does the same thing for you. And before we get started, we always like to have Allison guess the twist based on the trailer and what little you know about the movie. What do you think the twist will be in Reanimator?
Guess the twist.
I've got to guess that the tech bringing people back is bad.
Wow. You really hit the nail. I mean, hit the nail on the head. I don't know if that's a twist at this point, though, Allison. I would challenge you and say that's what we
just
think.
Like,
you know,
that's what we think. Yeah. I mean, maybe a surprising death is coming for our main character.
Great. Love it. All right. So let us begin by ruining H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator. We open on the University of Zurich's Institute of Medicine. And two cops and some doctors are listening to an office door, and they're just hearing a man, screaming and throwing things around. And eventually they're able to get through the door, and they find a student, a third-year medical student named Herbert West, who is the sketchiest, squirmiest, bug-eyed freak you've ever met. Like, it's just like the most arrogant, like somebody you probably met in grad school. You're like, this guy makes me insane. And he is injecting a liquid into the body of his mentor, Dr. Hans Gruber. Now, Hans Gruber is also the name of the villain in Die Hard.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I'd like to think that maybe this character was his father. Like, I like to think that they exist in the same universe. And he's injecting him with a shot, and the cops go and obviously grab Herbert West and drag away. He's like, you idiots, you're going to ruin, I have to record his vital signs, you're ruining my experiment. And unfortunately, Dr. Hans Gruber does not look good. You know, like he's like shaking and bloody, and there's blood spraying out of his mouth. And they're like, did you kill him? Like, what happened in here? And Herbert West says, of course he's dead. The dosage was too large. And this is already like, okay, we already know if that's why he's dead, you gave him that dosage. So we already know it's like you're a scientist, a bad scientist, and you're an asshole right off the top.
Yep. Wow. We are just getting in.
And there's a female doctor and she's like, you killed him. And West turns around and he says, no, I did not. I gave him life. Roll of credits.
Amazing.
We then arrive at the Miskatonic Medical School in Arkham, Massachusetts. So Miskatonic University and Arkham are both H.P. Lovecraft. So Arkham is like a H.P. Lovecraft location where he like references and sets things. And then Miskatonic University is like, if you ever need an expert who has like a copy of the Necronomicon, they have it there.
Oh, okay, great.
You know,
great.
So you can call them up. They're going to find you a copy and you could like take it out interlibrary loan or whatever. And we meet our
library loan.
I remember.
I know.
I haven't been to the library in a year. That's on me. I should have done more research. I'm going to start going again. I miss the library.
Yeah, me too.
So we meet our main character, Dan Kane. He's also a third-year medical student, and he is working in the hospital. So I guess doing like the actual like hands-on training. And he and Dr. Herod are trying to revive a completely topless woman, like an older woman. And I saw this, I'm like, I wonder if I could book that role. We're like, we just see like an older woman with her boobs out and like dead. And I was like, I wonder how she got that.
That's like the kind of nudity I could do where it's like very medical.
Medical nudity. Oh, yeah.
Medical
put that
nudity.
Skills. Medical nudity.
Medical nudity.
And so, but they, unfortunately, they cannot revive her. And Dan does not want to keep giving up. He like used the defibrillator and he's trying to do her chest compressions. And Dr. Harrod finally has to say to him, you know, Dan, your optimism is touching, but it's a waste of time. A good doctor knows when to stop. That is basically our thesis sentence. A good doctor knows when to stop. Ergo, a bad doctor, he doesn't know.
Does not know.
So obviously Dan is like very haunted by this experience and sort of carries this with him. But he says, you know, the Dr. Harrod said, just take the body to the morgue, which he does. And he chats with Mace, who's the security guard who sits inside the morgue, and they kind of like banter. And he drops off the body to Dr. Hill. And so he's sort of like the star of the university who like wins all these grants. He does like studies on like the brain. So he does all the autopsies, and he invented a laser drill to do brain surgery. So like essentially it's a laser that just cuts through bone rather than a bone saw. So he's like, everyone's like, oh my God, you get to work with him. Like he's so incredible. Right. And Mace jokes, I don't know why they bothered to lock the door to the morgue. Nobody wants in and ain't nobody getting out. Wrong again, Mace. Wrong again. Yeah. So Dan drops off the body in like the freezer section of the morgue. I don't know what the term of it is, but it's freezing in there. And they've got a ton of bodies in there. And Dan is obviously very freaked out by them. Understandably, he's very nervous around death. And he sees Dr. Hill sort of performing an autopsy, and you see him sort of like, you know, have like a moment of disgust. And right then, the dean of the school, Dean Halsey, comes in to talk to Dr. Hill. And I feel like the 70s and 80s was a time for deans in movies. You never hear about a dean anymore.
Yeah. You really, I mean, I guess Promising Young Woman, we saw a dean.
Oh, see, I didn't see that yet. Okay. Oh, boy.
Well, that doesn't give anything away.
So there's a dean? Okay. Well, why even bother?
Now I'm not going to see it. You told me the ending.
Would you consider that horror? Is something we could do? Or not really more of a psychological?
I mean, I've seen it and you haven't, so we could do it that way. But like,
okay.
But like, it was thriller. I think thriller. It lives in the thriller world. But yeah, deans really were like the main character of 70s and 80s movies that were remotely near a university. There was always a dean.
They had their time in the sun. So Dean Halsey comes in, and he introduces both Dan and Dr. Hill to a new third-year medical student, Herbert West. And it reminded me of Orphan, like, are we not calling this guy's references? Because we just saw this guy kill Hans Gruber. But he's just showing up. He goes to America to sort of like, you know, make a new fresh start for himself and enter a new medical
school. American
dream.
You can start over even if you've murdered people.
Yeah. So, you know, Dan tries to be nice to him. It's like, oh, what was your research on? And Wes says, death, and just sort of brushes past him. And so Herbert West, as soon as he gets here, he goes up to Dr. Hill and he's like, everything you have is just derivative of Dr. Gruber's research in the early 70s. Like, you had this theory about the location of the will and the brain. Like, you know, it's all wrong. And in Europe, you're considered a plagiarist for stealing all of Gruber's works. Like, right out of the gate, hasn't even talked to this guy. And he's like, you think that the brain, like, basically the limit of brain death is like 12 minutes is what they're arguing. And he's saying, you still think that 12 minutes is the limit, but I know that it's possible to go beyond 12 minutes before.
Okay. Got it.
Before brain death means you cannot be revived. So he's saying, like, you know, you're old school. Like, you don't even know what I've cooked up. Unfortunately, we do. Man. We're about to see a movie about it, and it's not going to be good. Mm-mm. And he's like, the fact you think that, like, frankly, your work on brain death is outdated. And Dr. Hill's like, excuse me, like, I don't even know who you are. And they all sort of like awkwardly blow past it. So they have this weird interaction. You think, okay, well, like, at least you don't have to see that guy. You'll have to see him in like lecture hall or whatever. Unfortunately, Dan is looking for a roommate, and we see him put up a little flyer, and he lives on 666 Darkmoor Avenue.
Oh, come on. Like,
I know. And unfortunately, I guess it's the middle of semester or something. So like, you know, there's only going to be one person who's looking for an apartment. Meanwhile, Dan is engaged to Megan Halsey, who is the daughter of the dean, played by horror legend Barbara Crampton, who's fabulous. You see them having sex, you know, having a great time. Megan's great.
Nice.
Megan's having a good time of her life, but Dan is sort of distracted, presumably by having had this patient die earlier in the day. And it's made worse by the fact that his cat Rufus jumps on his back while they're having sex and sort of like ruins the mood a little bit.
Yeah, cats. They know when to show up and make things worse.
And then probably gave him all toxoplasmosis while the cat was out.
Now we know.
And so Megan's like, hey, I can't sleep over because she still lives with her dad. She's also a student. And he's like, your dad, like, is so behind the times. Like, we're engaged. You should be able to stay over here. Like, he knows me. And she's like, I know he's the last living Puritan, but he still somehow thinks that I'm a virgin. And, like, I'm going to wait, save myself till marriage. But as soon as you graduate, we're going to get married. Don't worry. And so they kind of, like, have, like, you know, they're, like, playing grab ass and, like sort of, like, chasing each other around nude in the apartment. There's a knock at the door. It's Herbert West with the little flyer. Megan, from the jump, is like, this guy seems very strange. He is very glowering and, like, he's not trying to hide that he's the villain, you know?
Right.
And he's, like, looking. It's like, imagine that person showing up to see your room. It's like, can we just meet a couple other people except for this guy?
This one guy? Yeah.
And he comes
in. Women always pick up on that. Like, women are always like, this guy has a weird vibe. And men are like, I don't know, he seems fine. Like,
and poor Megan, like, this is the whole movie for her being like, I don't think this is a good idea. Like, I think something bad's going on. And Dan being like, no, I've met plenty of guys. This is most of the people who go to medical school. Like, I think he's fine. And they show him around, and Herbert has one question is, does this building have a basement? It does.
Oh, great.
But it's not like a finished basement. It's just like a place where, like, shit lives, you know, like, just like old broken furniture or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Megan's like, I got to go, but I think we should talk about things or whatever. And, but Dan is being like, no, I mean, that seems totally fine. So he takes Herbert West has a big fistful of cash, and he has moved in, and he's officially his roommate. They also have a class together from Dr. Hill. So they're in the morgue together in this, like, smaller class. And you see Dr. Hill peel off the scalp of a corpse, in his words, in the style of peeling a large orange. And then he uses a bone saw to cut off the top of the skull and then just sort of sink his hands into the brain. And he's... While he's lecturing. No. It's not even like, okay, everyone gather around. It's just like he's sort of casually talking and then, like, putting his hands into this poor dead person's skull.
No.
While he's doing this, Herbert West snaps a pencil and then just sort of stares Dr. Hill down. And then he does it again. And Dr. Hill's like, I suggest you get a pen. And they sort of have, like, a, I don't know, like, medical school pissing contest where Herbert West is like, you are shutting down their minds before you've even let them flourish. Like, what if we sought beyond the bounds of what we know to be true about the brain? And everyone's like, dude, we are just trying to, like, get out of here. Like, I have other classes.
This is a pass-fail for me. We're in the morgue.
Like, we have to be here in order for us to, like, be able to get this, you know. And Dr. Hill says to Herbert before he leaves, it's going to be a pleasure to fail you. So we already know they're kind of, like, at odds.
Okay, great.
That night at the Halsey's house, the dean and his wife had Dr. Hill and his wife over because he got this the grant for inventing this laser drill to do lobotomies and other things. While they're there, you start to notice that Dr. Hill is staring at Megan, who her father sort of roped into being at the dinner. And in this very intense and, like, honestly, like, sexual way that's completely inappropriate for, like, a work dinner where also the person's father is there. And also you're the same age as the father. And also she is engaged to someone who's in your class.
No.
So it's, you know, so at a certain point, Dan comes to pick Megan up. They have, like, a study date. And Dr. Hill said, well, before you go, I'd like to give you a toast. And his toast is to Megan, my esteemed colleague's capable, beautiful, loving daughter. The obsession of all who fall under her spell.
Ew.
And both Dan and Megan are like, dude, he's standing right there. Like, that's my father. Like, what are you doing? Also, he's married.
Also, every single layer to that is inappropriate. Like,
yes.
And who's there, where they are, what he's saying, like, all, like, every
how
layer
we know
is
each
wrong.
Other. Yeah, I guess I feel like, shout out to, like, all of, like, feminism and people who have worked against the idea that, like, people, like, being bewitched by women or, like, falling under women's spells, like, that was such a large part of, like, a conversation of, like, well, I couldn't help myself. And I appreciate everyone who did their part so that we don't have to hear that all the time. Because when you hear it now, you're like, that's insanity.
Right. Your excuse for bad behavior is, I am a, like, have any power over you? Like, no, you're making choices. You're a human being. Come on.
Yeah, you might as well say, like, you're a witch. You know, like, that's basically what we're saying.
That's what it feels like it's drawn back to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Over at Dan's house, Megan is again very perturbed. She's like, why is West always in his room? Like, he's such a weird guy. I actually think that's fine. If you were a roommate, just stay in your room. That's fine.
Yeah, it's a dream roommate.
And Dan's like, he's cracked, but it's fine, you know? And Megan said, okay, but like the cat hates him. Where is the cat? They do not know where the cat is. The cat is gone. They look all over, and the only room that they have not checked is old Herbert West's room. And Megan's like, fuck it. She opens the door. She looks around. She finds the body of Dan's dead cat inside West's mini fridge, which is also disgusting. Where it's like, did you just get a mini fridge for this? Like, I hope it's not next to your snacks.
All purpose. Right.
Right. Yeah. Is your like Snickers underneath his cat skeleton or whatever?
Keep candy in the fridge. That is a good piece of advice.
Oh, yeah. Put a Kit Kat in the freezer. Forget about it.
Ugh, get out of here.
And so she's screaming and freaking out. Herbert arrives home. And he's like, what are you doing in my room? How dare you? And I'm like, I would be murdering this person. Because the dead cat's body is in his mini fridge. You know, there's no arguing about that. And they're like, what the hell is this? What's going on? And Herbert's like, actually, the cat got into the garbage and it got a jar stuck on its head and it suffocated. And so I just put it in the fridge, you know, so it wouldn't be gross because I didn't think you'd want to find it like that. In a way where like Megan's like, no, I know you killed this cat. This is disgusting. No. Something is weird. And Dan's like, well, I guess that's something that a human would do.
No, it's not.
It's like, Dan, what are you talking about?
Get it together. That is not okay behavior.
Dan, also looking at the mini fridge, finds a vial of glowing green liquid. And like, what the fuck is this? And Wes like, that's none of your business. Just like, it's none of my business.
This is like pre-Gatorade, right? It's like before Gatorade existed. It essentially looks like Gatorade. Lemon lime.
Now you could say, that's like Monster Energy drink. And he'd have to be like, all right, I have to believe you because it looks like that. It looks like a neon beverage. But Wes tells him, you know, that's none of your business. And just like none of my business that you're sleeping with Dean Halsey's daughter. I wouldn't want to see you thrown out of school and the profession on moral grounds. And I was going to say, is that possible? But then it's like, I went to Notre Dame and technically when I was there, I don't know if it's still true. Technically speaking, you could be expelled for having premarital sex. So I guess I have to assume in some places this could be grounds that he could be thrown out of school. But that's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And Dan says as much. He's like, I'm pretty sure Dean Halsey will, like, understand if he finds out you're, like, doing experiments with dead cats. You know, like, you're a student at the school. Right. You can't be doing this shit. And Herbert West says, would you like to find out? So they just, like, don't do anything. Megan goes home. Dan goes to sleep. And in the middle of the night, he wakes up out of a dead sleep to the sound of a cat howling.
No.
He gets up. He grabs a baseball bat. And he's running around the house trying to find the source of the sound. He's knocking on West's door only to realize that the howling is coming from the basement. Allison, at this point in the film, I have to ask, what would you do?
What would you do?
I would lock the door from the basement to the apartment.
Yes, correct.
And be like, that's now your problem. You're kicked out. I'm putting all of your stuff out in the hallway or outside or whatever the layout is that gets it out of my apartment and puts you, like, here's your money. Like, just go away forever.
Exactly.
And then calling the university and being like, this guy is fucked up. Let's get him out of here.
I think that's the right thing to do based on the fact he doesn't do that and then things just get much worse.
Yeah, of course. Like, you can't be like, all right, well, that's strike one. Like, that's not
all right, you killed one of my cats, but if I get two more cats and they both end up dead in your fridge, I'm going to be
mad. You're out of here.
So Dan, he shoves the basement door open and has sort of like a comical pratfall where he falls down the entire flight of stairs. Only to find Rufus, who has been brought back to life, attacking West, like savagely clawing his face. And immediately Dan starts chasing the cat around with him, like trying to hit him with a baseball bat. I was like, that's your cat. Like, I was like, wouldn't you assume like, oh, maybe the cat wasn't dead? Like, why would you think like, I'm going to crush my cat with a baseball bat?
I don't think if I had seen my cat dead in a fridge and then alive later that I'd be like, oh, my cat's back.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh no, my cat's back. I better kill it.
That's a fair point. But that, to be fair, we've already done Pet Sematary. So now you have enough institutional knowledge to know that
to know that a pet's return is probably evil.
Sometimes dead. This is another movie where the motto is sometimes dead is better. All the time. If it's already dead, the dead is better.
Yeah, I think that ultimately, like, dead is better. Once you're dead, that's it. No more coming back.
And sometimes, depending on the movie, sometimes you think dead's better no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
After the first
I think dead's better in most scenarios.
So they're able to essentially kill the cat again. And then Dan, inexplicably to me, sits down with Wes to be like, how did this happen? And Wes gives his theory of death. Basically, he's like,
it's really quite simple. All life is a physical and chemical process, correct? It stands to reason then that if one could find extremely fresh specimens and recharge that chemical process, bang, we have reanimation.
The theory is not new, Wes.
So essentially, the body is just a car and the battery's dead. So if we're able to restart the battery, he's arguing you'll be able to reanimate life in a dead corpse. And I'm like, all right, well, I don't, knowing what I know about medicine, sure, that seems fine. And he says, well, I've conquered brain death in animals. I've been able to bring them back, but I have not been able to, when you put it into humans, they become violent, which we already saw with Dr. Gruber, is him thrashing around and freaking out. And he asked Dan, would you join me in my quest to defeat death? And Dan refuses to help, not because it seems mad, as Wes puts it, but because Dan just doesn't believe it. He's like, I just don't think that that's true. And Wes says, watch this. And then he reanimates poor Rufus again.
No,
and
Rufus now I feel bad for the cat.
I know. And Rufus, like, his, like, intestines are out. He's bleeding. He's, like, screaming. So, like, I'm assuming that the cat is in terrible pain, right? And
yes, he injects. Absolutely.
So he injects a syringe of the glowing green goo into Rufus's, like, the back of his skull. And he's screaming and he's howling. And they're like, how did this happen? Suddenly, they hear a scream behind them. Meg has come back over.
Oh, good.
And Meg's like, what the fuck are you doing? Why does the cat look like that? Why did he put that goo in there? Asking all the relevant questions. Like, Meg is the only one where I'm
these
like,
are the right questions to ask.
So the next day, Dan does try to do the right thing and tell Dean Halsey about Wes' like experiment.
Good.
And how he has seen Wes bring dead tissue back to life because he saw the cat. And Dean Halsey says, this is not real. He is a charlatan. Like, this cannot be real. And the fact that you're coming to me makes me really, like, sad. I thought you were, like, a real student and, like, an actual scientist. And Dan's trying to explain to him, you know, like, Meg saw it. And now Dean Halsey's like, what are you bringing my daughter in? Like, is this guy, like, doing experiments in your house and my daughter is seeing it? Like, what are you talking about? Obviously, you know, things are not going to be good at Thanksgiving or whatever, hopefully.
No, going to get messy.
Yeah. And Dan's like, no, I'm sorry. And Dean Halsey's like, I don't want to hear about this. Okay, he's doing experiments, like, at his home. First of all, Herbert West is expelled. Second of all, you are, like, you're going to have to write me a written apology, and then I'm going to suspend your student loan. But the way he said it, I was like, when he says student loan, do they mean scholarship? Because I'm like, I don't think you can suspend a student loan. So, essentially, he is like, I'm going to make it financially very difficult for you to get through this program. So now Dan does that thing where it's like, you know, when people are like, oh, well, if I'm such a bad person, maybe I should be a bad person. And it's like, well, then you were a bad person.
Doubling down. You're like, oh, I just needed permission to be worse.
Yeah. Like, you don't want me to reanimate dead flesh? Then I'm going to reanimate everything.
That's
piece
all
of dead
I'm going to do.
It's like, okay, Dan, you really played this hand terribly.
Truly.
So, but either way, Herbert West is expelled. Next thing you know, Dan is wheeling a body into the morgue. He chats with Mace, the security guard, and Mace tries to peek under the shroud to look at the body. And we see that it's Herbert West. So he's wheeling a living Herbert West into the morgue.
Okay. Sneaking him in.
Sneaking him in. Because Herbert has been expelled and he's technically not allowed to be on the school property anymore. And Mace is like, okay, if you're going to be in there, lock the door behind you, I'm going to go get coffee. Mace, a security guard, you are not prepared for what's about to happen here, unfortunately.
No.
So he's like, but I know this guy. You know, I've known Dan for 3 years at this point. I trust him. They go into the refrigerated section of the morgue, and they find a body, and Herbert West just injects the body. And it's like the freshest one they could find. It's only a couple hours old. They had like a burn victim. They didn't want to go with that. They had like someone with a gunshot wound. He didn't want to go with that. They had a bunch of bodies, but they were all a wreck.
Okay.
So they inject the guy. And meanwhile, Dan's like, this is a bad idea. I don't know why I did this. Like, we should just, and Herbert's like, no, we just got to give it some time and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then we just keep going with the experiment. Meanwhile, Meg is with her father up in the hospital where Dan is in resident or interning. Again, I don't know anything about medical school.
Nor do I.
But Dean Halsey's like looking for Dan because he's like, I told Dan that he's suspended off this. I don't want him in the morgue. I don't want him working. Like, he has to do this apology to me. I need to talk to Dan about this right now. So Dean Halsey goes down to the morgue while this is all going on.
Okay.
The corpse is not reanimating. Dan's like, fine, we tried it. Let's just wrap it up. Mace, the security guard, is going to be back in a second. And Herbie West says, no, I'm going to give him a double injection of the agent. And he gives him twice the amount of the reanimating agent. This motherfucking corpse shoots straight up and just starts trashing the place. So there's like blood spraying out of his mouth. This is also like a big guy to begin with. So it's not like a little grandma that they're like about to take on. And this motherfucker is literally lifting like gurneys with bodies on them and hurling them across the room. Like, and Dan and Wes are just screaming and trying to run away from this guy as he's like trashing the place because he, while he may be physically reanimated, his mind apparently is not. Just then, Dean Halsey comes in and goes to open the door of the freezer section. The corpse is so strong.
The freezer section.
I do not mean to be in any
frozen
way.
Frozen foods.
The frozen food section of your local morgue.
Of the morgue.
Whole Foods sponsored morgue. The corpse, the reanimated corpse, kicks through the door and knocks, like, essentially leaps out of Dean Halsey and then starts kicking his ass. So he's throwing Dean Halsey around the room, who is obviously completely shocked and has, like, no idea what to do. Literally throwing him into shelves, like, blood everywhere, screaming while Dan and Wes try to figure out how to stop this rampaging corpse. And the only way they could do it is Wes takes a bone saw and jams it through the corpse's torso till it essentially emerges through his chest cavity. Unfortunately, in the melee, Dean Halsey has been murdered. So they have killed Dean Halsey. And Dan's the corpse was strangling him.
The corpse strangling. Okay.
Because the first one happened, I was like, are we supposed to think he's not really dead? They're going to give him the agent. But no, we're to believe he really was inadvertently killed. I guess he's an older man. Just getting physically lifted off his and thrown like 20 feet across the room. I guess we're to think there's enough
damage.
That'll
do it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so Herbert West says, I have an idea. And Dan's like, we can't Dean Halsey, the reanimating agent. And Herbert's like, I hear what you're saying, but I'm already doing it. So then they put Dean Halsey.
This guy.
I know. Because Dean, he's like, okay, so he's so fresh. Like, Dean Halsey just died. We give him the agent. Yeah. He's going to be totally fine. It works, but Dean Halsey is not totally fine. He is also like a blood spewing zombie. Like, he's more alert, but he's still a zombie.
In the trailer, there's so much like blood spitting.
Yes.
Like, there's just so much mouth spitting blood that I think that like is this part of it.
Yeah.
Like, is reanimating a blood spitting situation.
I guess so. And they don't really explain that. There's a lot of moments where I'm like, okay, but like, why would that happen? Or like, how did that happen? And no, everyone is reanimated. Just blood starts gushing out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And they're like immediately pale and zombie-like and like sort of scrambling around, like moaning and like grabbing and like throwing glasses, you know. Meanwhile, Megan, who has been waiting up in the hospital, was like, where's my father? I don't know where Dan is. She goes down to the morgue and fucking walks in on this. She walks in on her father covered in blood, strangling both Herbert West and her fiance, Dan. She's like, Dad, like, I didn't know how mad you were. Like, oh shit, you know. And just then, Mace's security guard comes running back from getting coffee, this poor bastard. And he's like, what's going on? And they look and Dean Halsey is sort of like huddled in the corner. And where Herbert West says, oh, you know, he just came in here and he freaked out. And he just started, like, trashing the place. And he took that bone saw and he put it through that corpse. That was all Dean Halsey. And Megan's like, I just talked to my father. Like, the idea that he came down here and just, like, wrenched a door off the hinges. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, he's an older man. He's not, like, he's not Superman, but, like, insane, you know?
Right.
And Mace says, oh, okay. And then he's like, fuck this, I'm calling the cops. Like, he's like, I don't get paid enough. I'm like campus security or whatever.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, Megan is watching her father in a straitjacket in a padded room covered in his own blood. Because I guess they're like—
So he's still alive.
He's undead.
He's
reanimated. Thank you, Allison. Yeah, he's reanimated. And I guess they're like, is he psychotic? He looks like he's a zombie, you know? It's not like, he had a psychotic break and we're going to treat him. It's like, this man
his skin
undead.
Is a different color.
Exactly. He's purple, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the person who is helping her through this is Dr. Hill. And he's like, I know you're alone now that your father's gone mad. Don't worry, I'm here for you. And if you ever feel lonely. And Megan's like, don't think I'll be feeling that lonely. I think I'm good.
Pass.
And so, but you know, obviously she's like distraught and vulnerable and Dan has not told her anything. And also, fuck Dan at this point. Like, also,
Dan, if you want to marry this woman.
Exactly.
You're going to need to have a little bit more open communication with her about what's happening in your life.
Yeah.
And the undead.
Yeah, if you want to marry someone, you cannot reanimate their father's corpse and then not be immediately upfront about it.
Right, and then blame, like, you know, blame violence on that corpse.
Exactly.
When it's you and your weird-ass roommate's fault.
Roommate's fault, Dan.
Yes.
And Dr. Hill's like, oh, you know, I think it's a neurological problem, so you just should give me a waiver, and I'll just perform exploratory surgery on him, and I'll figure it out. Because he's like, you know, he's the one with, like, the laser drill, and he's obsessed with doing, like, brain surgery. Mm-hmm. And Megan's like, I guess. Like, I don't know. But then she sees her father, and he bangs his head on this one-way mirror. And Dr. Hill's office is a office with a one-way mirror into a padded cell. And I was like, out the middleman. You know?
Yeah.
Why not have a one-way mirror in your office to a padded cell?
At all times.
And Megan says, no, I'm going to figure out what happened to him and I'm going to help him. As soon as she leaves, okay. Dr. Hill goes into the padded room with two orderlies. They wrestle Dean Halsey into submission and they give him a lobotomy. So, but then is that worse than where he was at? I don't know. But either way, they immediately lobotomize him. Like, I was like, can you even schedule a lobotomy like with that little lead time, you know?
Yeah, it's like also like it's weird that they just jump to that and not just sedation.
Yes, yeah. And I guess what I think like Dr. Hill, like Herbert West is his own thing. Dr. Hill also is his own thing. They are both two people obsessed with brain death and like being legends in the medical field and figuring out how to surpass human knowledge, which as we've known from this past week of movies, not great. Shouldn't do
not
it.
Not great.
So Meg goes home and she finds Dan waiting for her and he says, I know you did this. I know you did something to my father. You should go home. I don't want to see you. And I was like, at least she gets what's going on. Like, she's not going to take any bullshit like, oh, he came down here and went crazy.
Right.
It's like, she knows.
What did you and West do to him to make him like that?
It was horrible. We didn't.
What did you do to him?
He's not insane. He's dead.
I had that moment of pure horror movie bliss where I'm like, what a great line. He's not insane. He's dead. And Meg slaps him twice in the face, which I appreciated. And he tells her, he's like, I'm really sorry. I'll tell you everything. While he's laying all this groundwork of like Herbert West's experiment, whatever, back in Dan's basement, West is doing, I guess, like paperwork to be like, I reanimated two corpses today and I'm a genius, you know? And
suddenly, yeah, I got to make sure you leave a trail of all the work you've done.
Like who's like, going to publish this? Like, yeah, it's like,
right,
how are you
thinking? This is a crime more than a discovery.
Right, you're going to go to prison. Like, there's no like, oh, I'm going to become, like, I'm going to go to Harvard and be like a tenured professor. Like,
right.
Yeah.
No.
So as he's doing this, somebody is in the basement behind him and it is Dr. Hill. And Dr. Hill says, I want to ask you, why does Dean Halsey scream with pain when you and I know he's dead? And Wes is like, and that's the problem is if you want to declare that you've mastered brain death, then when somebody shows up who's undead, people are going to figure out you did it.
Yes.
You played yourself. And Dr. Hill says, I'm going to take your discovery and I'm not going to tell anybody about it because if you don't let me steal your findings, then I am going to expose you and I'm going to get you sent to prison. And Wes is like, I didn't think about that.
Be in prison.
Yeah, everyone involved except for Meg should absolutely be in prison. And Mace's security card.
Yeah, Meg and Mace can, like, go live normal lives. The rest of them belong in jail.
And while Dr. Hill's, like, sort of gloating, like, I'm going to be a legend, I'm going to be famous, Herbert West grabs a shovel and hits him across the head and then uses the edge of the shovel to decapitate him. So literally kills him so savagely that his head is rolls off. And Allison, what do you think Herbert West does with that head?
Oh, does he shoot it full of goo?
He sure does. He shoots it full of goo. And then separately, he also shoots the body full of goo.
Well, it's like, are you using twice the amount or did you split it half and half? I don't like
it. The movie implies he isn't almost, he's like a gallon, like a gate, like one of those big Gatorade jugs. Like
it makes me, that has like the little plastic handle.
Right.
Oh, you mean like the orange ones that you like dump when you on a coach when you win?
I mean, that's basically what, by the end of this movie, that's how much he has. It's like gallons
that's
and gallons.
Crazy. It feels like he shouldn't have that much of it.
Yeah, and like, I mean, to be fair, there's another fridge in the basement, so I guess it's just like the electrical bill must be insane in this house. and so because it was such a fresh kill, Dr. Hill can speak a little bit, and he says to Herbert West, you bastard. Unfortunately, West did not figure out. He's a man with too much focus, because what he doesn't see coming is Dr. Hill's body gets up and just fucking knocks him unconscious.
That's funny.
So in the meantime, Meg and Dan, they go to Dr. Hill's office to see her father. They realize that he's been lobotomized. And she's like, why the fuck would he do that right away? Like, this just happened. This is awful. And while they're looking through his files to essentially, like, find out, like, what's going on or, like, what they should do, how would you fix this, you know, Dan finds a folder in Dr. Hill's file cabinet of pictures of Meg, a lock of a strand of her hair, newspaper clippings, because I guess she goes to Swarthmore, so it's like newspaper clippings of like her college experience in a file. So he's not just like into her, he's obsessed with her.
He's like, yeah, that's not great.
Dan does not tell her this, and I don't know why, but Meg knows that Dr. Hill's creepy and has a thing for her, so... While it would be distressing, but maybe he's like, this is just too much for her to deal with right now.
Yeah, part of me is like, with everything else going on, like, is that information I would need right then? Like, maybe not. Like, maybe I would want to take a beat, we'll figure out my dad, then we can get to this guy who's been obsessed with me in a creepy way.
Yeah. Like, so they're like, well, we can't figure anything out tonight. You know, Dan takes Meg home and drops her off, and then he goes back to his house, and Wes is just waking up from being knocked out by Dr. Hill. He's like, oh my God, he stole all my notes. I had to kill him. And Dan says, is Dr. Hill dead? And Herbert West says, well, not anymore, which I thought was funny. And Dan's fuck you, and he starts shaking Wes. He's like, why did you do all this, you know? And Dan realizes that Dr. Hill lobotomized the dean, essentially so that, like, the dean would not be able to testify, like, if later he became conscious again, he would not be able to say, oh, Herbert West is the one who figured out this drug.
Okay, got it.
So Dr. Hill, it was purely...
It's a long walk.
I know, a professional decision to lobotomize his boss, essentially.
Right. So he can take credit for a reanimating compound that he's stealing from another psychopath.
Exactly. Back at Dr. Hill's office, we see his body stumble in, and his body is carrying his head in a tray. And there's a lot of physical comedy where he's like trying to turn on a lamp, and he's like knocking over shit, which I really appreciated.
I appreciate that.
And for some reason, the head wants to be in a pool of fresh blood. So he like sprays a bunch of blood, and the head is like, ugh. And the head is so disgusting and so horny and like so like moaning, but in a way where you're like, calm down, you know?
Do you like this? Like,
I mean, I guess maybe a little bit. It's sort of like, this is to him like a fulfillment of like, I am beyond science. Like, I am this like masterful creation, which would be bad enough. But he also has a game plan. And he goes over to Dean Halsey's one-way mirror. And we find out, Allison, and it's played very subtly, so I wasn't sure if I looked up online. It turns out that he has some sort of telekinetic command over Dean Halsey. So they're able to sort of commune in a nonverbal sense.
Okay. And because they're both reanimated?
I guess we're to believe yes.
Okay.
And of course, Dr. Hill's body is holding his head, and the head tells Dean Halsey, it's time for you to come out now. Oh. Now, Allison, let me ask you, who do you think will survive this film?
Who will survive?
I hope it's just Meg and Mace.
And then who do you think will unsurvive of the undead already?
I mean, his body and head are separated. I don't see a world where he's like, and I'm going to go out and live in the world again. And then I think everybody else, maybe Jake survives. Is Jake a person?
No. No, we've got Dan, Herbert West, Dan. Meg, and
Dan is who I was thinking.
He does look like a Jake. You're not wrong.
Well, there was like a touch of Jake Ryan from 16 Candles to his like vibe in the trailer.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know? Okay, so I think that's why I thought it. And also like Jake and Dan are the same name to me. So
Jake and Dan. I have a cousins in the same immediate family, a Jake and a Dan. So that makes sense.
So they're the same.
They're the same person.
I think he might survive, but that everybody else has to die.
Great.
Ashley's Memorial Day sale is going on now. Shop our biggest selection of hot buys, cool deals, or shop limited-time savings on new summer spaces. Plus, get 72-month special financing on select in-store mattress purchases made with your Ashley Advantage Synchrony credit card between May 14th and June 3rd. Whether you're redecorating indoors or rethinking your outdoor space, save big on this season's trending styles. Only at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. No minimum purchase required. See store for details.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
So we see, we're back at the morgue, and we see Mace's security guard. He's reading a nudie magazine called Boudoir. And he does not see, because the person is approaching from the other angle. We see a shambling body in, like, scrubs. Oh, are scrubs. Uh-huh. Oh, are they?
Great.
Carrying a duffel bag. And then instead of a human head, it has like the head of an anatomy model that we have seen in Dr. Hill's office, with like one half has skin and like a plastic eye, and the other one you could just see like their brain. Yeah. And it has like sort of like a little surgical cap and a face mask on to try and disguise the fact it's not a real human head, but it's obviously not.
That's very funny.
And what's crazy is, like, Mace is so interested in his nudie mag that he doesn't notice the person until they're almost all the way inside, but then the person's nose falls off the bottle. And he turns and he looks, he goes, Dr. Hill, is that you? Because he's so tall. And Dr. Right. Hill goes, yes, it's me, but it's clearly coming from the bag where his head is. And Mace is like, he goes inside and Mace goes, coffee time. And he's like, and he just goes on break, which is absolutely what I do. But it's like, so it's basically like, if somebody's in the morgue, I get to fucking get out of here. I don't have to watch these bodies.
Yeah.
So Dr. Hill goes in there and his body puts his head in a fresh pan of blood, and his body goes into the morgue and starts taking all the corpses out, Allison. Whatever his plan is, it's a multi-corpse plan, okay?
No, he's assembling an army of the undead.
Allison, he sure is.
Oh, no!
And so Dan finally gets, like, a fucking clue or whatever, and he runs to Meg's house to make sure she's okay. And Meg's like, what? I gotta get some sleep. I can't handle this.
Okay.
Like, my dad's, like, insane, you know? And Dan says, I just feel horrible about everything. And they have this sort of, she's like, you should transfer to another school. And he's like, I will. I want you to have a good life, but I love you. And then they go to kiss, a fucking zombie hand punches through the door, and it's her father. And he just goes berserk.
How did he get
runs
out?
In. So Dr. Hill unleashed him.
I see.
Because Dr. Hill, we're to understand, as we find out, he is able to exert some control over the other reanimated.
Yeah, and they clearly have the kind of strength to, like, escape things.
Right, so I guess it's sort of like, yes, are they sentient in the way we want them to be? No. Do we accidentally make them super strong? Yes, and that's really something.
Yes, that is something.
And so Dean Halsey punches the door and attacks all of them and knocks Meg unconscious, and then he picks up Meg's body and he takes her back to the morgue for Dr. Hill's nefarious purposes and leaves Dan's unconscious ass on the ground.
Oh, my God.
Allison. Things are going to go from bad to worse right about now. I don't think you're going to like it.
Oh.
Meg wakes up on the gurney.
Oh, my God.
She is totally nude. Dr. Hill's body has her own father, Dean Halsey, has stripped her nightgown off.
Oh,
and Dr. Hill is, like, leering at her completely nude body from his tray. And so Meg's just screaming, like, what the fuck is going on?
Right. Last thing you know, you're, like, making out with your fiancé that you might never see again because he's going to transfer. And then you wake up nude with the head of your father's colleague staring at you from a tray because it's been removed from his body. Like, no, that
even
is not okay.
Even worse, the body is, like, massaging her boobs and, like, sexually assaulting her. So Meg recently is, like, losing her shit. She, like, gets one of her arms free and, like, pushes the body's head off. Because she's like, she's like, she didn't even realize it wasn't a real head. She's like, And then Dr. Hill, I guess he's like, now's the time to make my move. And his body picks up Dr. Hill's head and he's like,
I've always been at your beauty, my dear. I think I've always loved you. You will love me.
And then Allison, I am very sad to tell you, the severed head starts like kissing down her body.
No. Oh, because that's like Kent, because it's not attached, so it's just going south.
Allison, it's going all the way south.
Oh, no.
And there is a full-length shot of Meg screaming, nude, very upset, as Dr. Hill's body like lowers his head in between her legs. Thank God, at the last second before, like, she has to go through something I don't know if you could really come back from. You know what I mean? Like,
I would like to, if you asked me what would you do now, I would kill myself because that's absolutely a memory that you just can't erase.
Exactly. I mean, the only bad part about this movie is if you kill yourself now, they might reanimate you and you still have to do it. You have to go through
it. Wait till I got, like, free from them and moved to another state and then I'd kill myself.
And so luckily, Wes finally interrupts them and Wes has, like, come, he's like, I'm very disappointed in you, Dr. Hill. I thought you were a man of science. You are trysting with some bubble-headed co-ed. So he is intervening, but he's also a piece of shit. Electric chair.
Yeah, he's
for
also like
Herbert West.
Being super misogynistic. Yeah. It's like, all right.
So they have like Dr. Hill and West have like that. You think you're a genius. I'm the genius. Oh. No, I invented this. You know, like, but West is doing that so Dan can sneak in and untie Meg, which I appreciate her, West, and one goddamn decent thing after unleashing this army of zombies in Massachusetts. Your home state. And Wes says to Hill, you can't steal my discovery. Who's going to believe a talking head? Get a job at a sideshow, which is very funny.
That is. It's in the trailer.
And Dr. Hill's like, why would you come here? Why would you make such a fatal mistake to come here and challenge me? And Wes says, I have a plan. And Dr. Hill says, so do I. Suddenly, all of the corpses get up at once. And they just start fucking going berserk, knocking all this stuff around, just wilding out. So it's like probably like 6 or 7 completely nude, mangled. You know, someone was in a fire. One of them is like their head was blown off.
Shot,
like,
yeah.
And they are just going absolutely ham on this lab.
No.
You know? And unfortunately, in the melee, they also grab Dan and Meg. They're, like, throwing them around, just being super violent. And Dr. Hill reveals that he gave them all lobotomies, even after death. So then when he revived them, they were...
They're lobotomized.
He's able to control them.
Yes.
Because one of his theories that is very briefly referenced at the beginning by Herbert is that he has a theory that the will, the human will, has, like, an actual location in the brain. And he was saying, I lobotomized that part so that I now control them. Now, Allison, does that make sense? No, but we take his word for it.
It's fine.
Unfortunately, these corpses, it's just chaos. It's, you know what I mean? It's not like they're like, we're going to like take you to my lair.
Organize.
Like, we're going to take control of the university. It's just fucking smashing glasses and tipping shit over. Just like
shit
screaming.
Over.
And, while this is happening, like, Megan is screaming at her father to stop because he's, like, attacking Dan, too. And he has this moment of, like, humanity where he realizes that, like, she's his daughter or, like, something has been done to him. And in his rage, he attacks Dr. Hill's body. And that enables Herbert West to sort of get free from the scrum. And he throws Hill's body into the hallway just as Mace's security guard is coming back. And he doesn't even get a line. Like, he just mouths the words, what the fuck, when he sees this headless body that's still moving, like, in the hallway. And from here on out, it is just blood. It is guts. It is, like, crazy, like, goo
messy
everywhere.
Yeah, so much goo.
And Dean Halsey, in a rage, like, on some level understanding what Dr. Hill did to him, grabs Dr. Hill's head and squishes it so hard, you guessed it, his eyes explode.
Great.
And when he does, all of the other corpses, like, scream in pain, like they're experiencing what Dr. Hill's body feels.
Okay.
And then he ends up crushing Dr. Hill's head in his hands and throws it out in the hallway. And the last time we see Mace is Mace, like, peers into the doorway and, like, this fucking corpse riot
going show.
On. And then just runs down the hallway to the elevators, which is that exactly what
I'm
he's not
him.
Being paid enough, you know?
No, he's not.
And because Dr. Hill is now dead, the amount of pain and, like, their connection to him, all the corpses are just, like, ripping out the fuse box, like, smashing light bulbs, like, knocking over chemicals. And eventually, like, this cloud starts billowing of toxic chemicals, I suppose. It's just, like, billowing out. And I just want to say this scene reminded me. I remember when Michael Jackson died, I had, like, a Craigslist roommate named Lance. And he's like, oh, you know, when Elvis died, my dad was at a bar and somebody ran in and said, Elvis is dead. And then everyone in the bar just started smashing all the stools and like just breaking bottles and stuff. And I said, is that what you think we should do for Michael Jackson? But I just, in my mind, like, it's just sort of like, just totally like, I just got to smash this. So all of them are just like hating each other, like fighting each other now. And then at a certain point, unfortunately, they grab, the other zombies grab Dean Halsey and tear him apart limb by limb as Meg looks on screaming. So even if there had been a way to get, to fix him or whatever, it's over.
That's gone.
And, you know, things are still are not looking great. And then, you know, finally Meg and Dan are like, we got to get out of here. We just got to make a break for the door. And Wes says, no, I have a plan. And his plan is he's going to inject Dr. Hill's body with a super duper dose of the reanimating agent. And I don't know whether he thought it would just like stop all of the corpses or whatever. But instead what happens is Dr. Hill's individual organs become animated and his long intestine shoots out of his torso and wraps itself around Herbert West and starts dragging him back to his corpse.
What?
So now like the individual organs.
Yeah, this science has gone fully, like early on, I'm like, yeah, I kind of can get behind a theory of reanimation, like, even though I know that that's, like, not something. But, like, I'm like, okay, like, that's, like, kind of, like, a little out there science. This is just full on, like, nothing makes sense anymore. Everything's doing its own thing.
Yeah, and much like, you know, a lot of the movies we watch for Sci-Fi Month, it's like, what was the thesis? Because if the thesis was, I can reanimate them, great, we're done. Not, I'm going to give dose after dose to see what will happen. Yes. Unfortunately, he's going to find out. A zombie's large intestine is going to crush him to death, basically. And so as he's being killed, he throws Meg and Dan, like, his duffel bag full of his notes and, like, the remaining last little bit of the reanimating agent. And he's sort of dragged away into this corpse scrum. And so Dan and Meg still have to, like, fight their way to the elevator because, like, now the corpses are getting out into the hallway of the hospital. So they have to, like, kick somebody's ass. And then finally they're in the hospital and they're like, okay, we just have to get up to the next floor. And a corpse gets inside and strangles Meg. And Dan can't get its hands off. And so he has to run and take a fire axe and he cuts off the arm of the corpse. Allison, they get up to the hospital. And it's too late. Meg is dying.
No.
He takes Meg, and just like we saw the exact same scene in the beginning, he runs, takes her to Dr. Herod, and they try to revive her. And it just doesn't work. And Dr. Herod, much more tenderly this time, was like, I'm really sorry. She's dead. And also, there's all this chaos in the hospital because of, like, the toxic chemicals. Like, the cloud is coming up.
There's
so everyone's like,
on.
We have to evacuate. So, you know, they're like, we're sorry, we'll give you a minute. Unfortunately, Allison, Dan's like, well, I do have a solution to this problem. And he does the thing that you never do, which is he reaches in his bag and he takes out the reanimating agent and he goes and he injects it into Meg's head. And we fade to black, but as we do, we hear the sound of Meg waking up and screaming. And that's the end.
And that's it.
And that's the very end.
What a movie.
So what are some fatal mistakes, do you think, if you could pick any, in this very well-thought-out, sensible, moderate approach to science?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, I would say definitely letting West continue to live there after the cat incident.
Yeah.
That would be, like, number one. And then, like, after finding out what he's up to, like, not being like, I'm calling the cops. Once the reanimating stuff is, like, in the mix, like, at any point, someone needed to press stop and just, like, bring in authorities and arrest all of these people.
Once somebody kills a cat.
Yeah, I think that that's really it. You don't need to keep seeing what they'll do next. Like, you know, it's not going to be good.
If this, then what else?
Yes, right.
I was trying to think of, like, is there any other scenario, like, what scenario, if you were a severed head, would you not want to find yourself in? Because I was trying to think, like, I guess there's some benefits to
it. If I'm a severed head?
When you're a severed head, what is the worst possible situation? Or the benefits of it? you know?
I mean, I think, like, I wouldn't want to be near, like, a pool or a hot tub or the mm-hmm. ocean, even though, like, as a living being, those are things I love. But, like, just the head, like, if it gets in water, I feel like that's it. You suffocate and die.
Yeah. I was saying one benefit to it is that, like, you could just be put in the overhead compartment and you wouldn't have to actually pay for a chair.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just ahead.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of benefits. You don't have to buy clothes.
You have to say clothes budget slash shoe budget slash.
Done. Slashed. I guess you got to up the makeup and the hats.
Right. You're going to have a lot. You're going to become a hat person. And I personally don't think I am a hat person.
I am not. My head is huge. It won't work.
I have a huge head too.
Yeah. Oh. That's probably why we found each other across a room of small-headed people.
Literally the gravity of our heads.
Yes. They both have orbits and we fell into each other's.
Allison, I think we've arrived at the end. And so I have to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10 screams, where would you rate Reanimator on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I think it is very gory, but it's also very over the top and there's a lot of comedic effect to some of the scenes. So I think I'm going to give it like a 5.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 4 because I feel the same way. I really like it. I think it's super fun. I think it's, but it's not scary. It's more like, oh God. Like when you see you know, like Dr. Hill's head being crushed and the eyes explode, I'm not scared.
Yeah.
I'm right. grossed but you're like, out. Ugh. And the moments of levity, which I love, you know, I love a horror comedy or anything approaching it. So there's certain lines of like, he's not insane, he's dead. And later where he's like, is Dr. Hill dead? He's like, well, not anymore. I just, to me, that is like what I love most about horror is sort of like, what a winking inside joke to the audience to be able to be like, I know we can make a joke about this because you guys are just completely on board with this.
Right. Yeah.
So again, the spooky scale is entirely for how spooky something is, not whether we liked it. This is a 10 on a did Hallie like it scale, if you ask me.
Yeah, this seems fun. I feel like I don't want to watch it, but I do kind of want to see some of those scenes.
Yeah, if you could somehow, I was like, could you do like a dry version of this where it wasn't quite so bloody? Like there's just so much liquid involved in the film.
Yeah, it seemed very wet.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, please.
We must.
Keep it spooky.
Keep it spooky.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.